welcome to another episode of the Extraordinary Moms Podcast. I'm so glad you joined us for another episode with another extraordinary mom. If you're with us for the first time, welcome to the podcast. This is a weekly show where every week on Tuesdays, I bring you another interview with a mom who shares her own personal motherhood journey and the lessons that she's learned along the way. There is such power in hearing other moms' stories. Sometimes motherhood can kind of be an isolating profession. There's things that we love about motherhood, and there's things that are really and truly hard. And if you are at home primarily, and you are dealing with your kids and the trials that inevitably come up with them on a daily basis, and you're doing it in isolation, it can feel so overwhelming. You can just feel so alone in that. But the fact of the matter is, we're all just doing the best we can. And even the very best moms have a hard time sometimes. And just knowing that can help us to feel better about the job that we are doing. So I encourage you to stop what you're doing, hug your kids, and give yourself a little pat on the back. Hug yourself as well, because you're doing a great job. This is a hard, hard job that you do, and you are doing such a great job, especially if you're listening to a podcast like this, where you're seeking to be intentional and to be encouraged by other moms. You're already doing a great job. So if you haven't already done so and you haven't listened to other episodes, I encourage you to go back on iTunes or Stitcher or your favorite podcast app and look through the various topics that we've covered so far and see if any of the other ones resonate with you. That way you can download them and make sure you click subscribe so next time a new episode comes out, you won't miss it. Thank you so much if you've left a rating or review. Those are so helpful to help other moms find the show. And I'm just so thankful for the positive feedback we've gotten. I wanted to read you one review from A. Mulliner that says, "Listening to these makes my day go way better already. What an inspirational idea and incredible examples of extraordinary moms." Thank you so much for that comment. I totally agree. I love the wide variety that we have of moms that are represented on this show. Even if you aren't going through the same thing as the mom that I'm interviewing, there's definitely some takeaways that you will inevitably have with each and every mom. So, as always, if you know of any extraordinary moms that you think I should interview, please email me with their story. My email is jessica@extraordinarymomspodcast.com. And as always, you can follow me on Instagram, jessicadahlquist3. You can leave comments there about individual episodes or new interview ideas. I just love hearing from you. So thanks a lot. Today I'm going to be speaking with Leandra Chergy. She is an awesome mom of two children, and one of which, her second son, Ryan, was diagnosed with autism around age 2. And she recently wrote a book called Make a Wish for Me, and the subtitle is A Family's Recovery from Autism. And she acknowledges in the book that you're never recovered from autism, but she talks about her process as she dealt with getting him diagnosed, dealing with the emotions that come after that diagnosis, learning the language, learning what all the therapies are, learning what's available, and then ultimately becoming a resource for other moms. Her book is a really honest depiction of what it looks like to have a child diagnosed with autism. She talks about the hardest parts for she and her family, and then she talks about the hope that they felt when he was making improvements. It's a really interesting interview, and I hope that this really just resonates with you, whether or not you are a mom of a child with special needs, you know someone that is, or you're just looking for a little dose of perspective and compassion for people that are really struggling in the point that they're at with their children. This is a really valuable interview, and I cannot wait for you to hear my conversation with Leandra. All right. I want to welcome to the show Leandra Chergy. Hi, Leandra.
Hi. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Great. I'm doing great.
Good. Where am I speaking to you from today?
I am in Simi Valley, California.
Awesome. I'm from Southern California, so I'm jealous. It's a good place to be. Well, we have never met before, but I got a hold of your book, Make a Wish for Me, which is about your son's journey and your whole family's journey, for that matter, when he was diagnosed with autism. And let me tell you, I have enjoyed this book so much, Leandra.
Oh, that makes me happy. Thank you. I appreciate that.
We're going to go more in depth on how this book came to be and what it was like to write it. But for our listeners who may not know you, why don't you give a little background on who you are, Leandra?
Well, I say this a lot, and I don't know if people understand it, but I am a mom first. That's usually what I tell people. I think when that title was bestowed on me, it became something I wore proudly. So yeah. I'm a mom first, as much to my husband hates to hear it, a wife second. and then from there, you know, my titles kind of go on and on, and now I can add author, which was a life dream. So that's a great life dream for me to be considered an author now. I have a home staging business. That's my creative side of life. I get houses ready for sale, and I really love doing that. And I, you know, I help my husband do some of his bookkeeping, office work stuff. So those are the things that fill my day as far as busy work. But those are kind of the titles that define me, I guess. There's more I left. There's lots more. But that's basically it.
That's the gist. And you have two children. And how old are your kids?
Jenna is 14, and my son Ryan just turned 13 yesterday.
Wow. So, yeah, they're very close in age. What was that like, having children so close in age?
You know, what was hard for me, because they were about 18 months apart, and I think it was that one would be in one phase, and we'd be getting out of that phase, and the other one would be going into that phase.
Yes. You know?
So we never quite got – I felt like we were in the same kind of phases forever. Like the formula phase, it was like 4 years of buying formula, and then, the diaper phase, it was 4 years of buying diapers. It was like, God, I just feel like it never ended, those phases, you know. And they would – one would be on a 2-nap a day, and one would be on a 1-nap a day, and then it took forever to get them out of the naps, and we just – that kind of stuff was hard when they were little. As they've gotten bigger, it's wonderful for them. You know,
yeah.
I have an older sister and a younger sister and a half brother. Like, I have all these siblings, but my older sister and I are about 2 years apart as well. And I just remember how special that was for me to have a sibling that close in age. And that's kind of why, all right, let's get on this. Let's have another, you know, and I want them to be close. And honestly, it's the best thing that could have happened to them. They are true gifts to each other. I don't know who is the luckier recipient, mm-hmm. because what he's brought to her life with him being autistic, and what she being aware of his autism has brought to his life. I mean, it's just this amazing circular flow of love.
I love that. That's beautiful. Yeah. I think logistically having children really close together is so hard in the beginning, but once you can get past the logistics of, okay, two car seats, where do we put the food in the shopping cart at the grocery store? Where, you know, once you get past that and they can play together and interact, my boys, like, they don't need me for very much, because they just want to play together all the time. And it's the greatest blessing.
It is. It really is.
It's so fun. Well, that is great. Just out of curiosity, what were some of your favorite parts of motherhood when you first became a mom? What were some of your favorite parts?
Oh, I mean, I think the instant, literally the instant they put her in my arms, I felt a sprinkle of fairy dust over my body. Like, it was, I didn't know what to expect. I really didn't. You know, I had a corporate job. I was traveling a lot. You know, I thought, I'll just get a nanny and I'll go back to work, you know.
Yeah.
And the second they put her in my arms, everything transformed in my life. I literally felt it instantaneously. And I remember looking at her saying, this is the best thing I've ever done in my whole life. Like, I just never imagined how my heart could completely explode with love. And that is what happened with both of them, actually. And you think, oh, it won't happen again. And it did. The second I held them, it happened again. And I just thought, man, this is, I don't know if my heart can take it, you know, but just that was the initial of holding them and finally seeing them. That was really amazing for me especially a first time mother, but even the second time.
Yeah.
And I think I really believed that I was almost mad at myself for not having more children sooner.
Hmm.
I thought, why didn't I do this sooner and have more of them? Because they're mm-hmm. so wonderful. And I had a wonderful mother myself. I lost her a long time ago, and that was really hard for me, but I was lucky to have all of her when I did. And she taught me, I think, how to be a selfless mother, which is hard to do. And to give a lot of yourself, if not all of yourself, especially in the beginning. That's the pleasures of motherhood, is just pouring everything I have into them and then getting it back.
That's, I love that.
I
love that. That's really beautiful. I love that perspective. That is so awesome. So let's delve a little bit deeper into your journey. So, you know, there's the stressful side of motherhood and the logistics, but then there's also, you know, the wonderful side. And when Ryan, your second child, was approaching age two, you noticed something a little bit different about him. Some things were starting to happen. Tell me about that time.
He was your typical kid, just happy, jovial, laughing, you know, running, learning to walk, all those things. And he just seemed like your regular kid. And then I could pinpoint the time frame, but it just seemed like a dark cloud just kind of came in over his whole personality. And he started to withdraw, and he just wasn't interested in us anymore. And he didn't smile anymore. He didn't laugh anymore. And the big one was he stopped talking. And I realized, and it was kind of something I hadn't realized all at once. It took some time for me to realize he stopped talking again, you know, and we thought it was due to ear tubes. He had to have ear tubes twice. And the first time we correlated his loss of speech to that, because he was very young. It was like not even a year old, you know. And then the second time was a few months later, and the tubes went back in. The tubes had fallen out. We put a second set in, and he didn't regain his words. And that's when I was very panicked, because I thought what I could consider typical behavior of a child. Yeah. I had an older daughter who I had watched, and I could see them side by side, and I thought something is not right here. You know, there's something happening, and it felt very big and very bad, I guess. And he literally just changed, and it kept getting worse, and the tantrums got worse, and he would just, for no reason, it could just be sitting in the living room and just completely, literally wig out, you know, we had no rhyme or reason for it. And it was very scary to not know why he was, you know, and I really felt like he was going away from me, from us. He was being taken away from me. That's what I felt like. And I just had to hit the pavement to find out what was happening. I wasn't getting much support from any of our doctors. They all kind of poo-pooed me, like, he's fine. He's a second child. He's a boy. He's all these ear tubes. Like, they had reasons.
Yeah.
But something in my heart was saying, that's not it. This doesn't happen when, you know, he's not talking, and that's a reason he's not talking. Yeah. And I knew I had to get to the reason why the talking had stopped.
Right.
And that's where it all kind of started, the whole process.
Yeah. That must be so devastating to see your child making progress, and then suddenly there's like a switch that's been flipped in your child, and you're not sure what is contributing to that. I want to read a little excerpt from your book, Make a Wish for Me. You're talking about how blissful his birth was, and then when these things started occurring close to age two, you wrote this. When he was born, he could see and hear, and I thought I was safe. After they're born with all the right parts, you think, all is well. I dodged that bullet. So how does 2 years go by and then this hits you between the eyes? And that was just so poignant for me, Leandra. Like having that comparison of you're always so glad when your baby's born, you're holding him and you're like, okay, you can, you can, you know, breathe a sigh of relief because your healthy baby is here. And you can never even envision that beyond this moment, anything could go wrong with them, or you would hope not, you know? And so at age two, when they're losing speech and, like you said, the tantrums and things, that has just got to be so devastating and just confusing and overwhelming because you don't even know what to do with this.
Exactly. Yeah. The unknown was worse than anything, I think. Yeah. I mean, hearing the diagnosis, it wasn't necessarily a relief, but at least I knew what it was, and I knew how to tackle it. Before that, it was just like this this dark unknown, and that's really scary.
Right. And the nice thing is that, I mean, as hard as it is to get a diagnosis like autism, there's such hope that comes with that word, because knowing what we know now about autism, and because it's gotten so much more awareness lately, thank heavens that there are therapies and knowledgeable doctors once you find the right ones. And, you know, like there is such hope when you don't know what to do. I can't imagine that feeling of paralysis of not knowing how to help yourself. And so tell me about that. Once Ryan was diagnosed, tell me what those first early days look like.
Well, I can tell you, I didn't have hope then. I can tell you
that. Okay, I want to know that, because I'm sure there's people listening who are on all different ranges of, you know, anywhere from denial that there's something wrong to like desperate for something. And So, tell me about that emotional roller coaster.
Oh, it was, I mean, it was, in a word, devastating. It was a devastating diagnosis. It was completely earth-shattering to me as a mother because, I mean, you blame yourself. When anything is, quote, wrong with your child, you blame yourself. And I was in a complete pit of despair. I mean, I'm a pretty positive, go get them kind of person. And that, it took me down. You know, it really, I was devastated over his diagnosis because it was so, I think, unexpected.
Yeah.
However, I didn't stay there. And it could have been very easy to stay there. And I know a lot of parents who do. And I just felt it was a disservice to him. Mm-hmm. It wasn't about me. It wasn't about my ego. It wasn't about any of that stuff. I had to just kind of pick myself up my bootstraps and say, get on this, sister. Like this, you got to make this happen for him. And, you know, it was a pretty quick turnaround, but I have to say there's still those remnants of just, you know, devastation in your heart. You know, you all at once you're given this diagnosis. I don't think it really matters what any diagnosis you get on your child is going to be devastating. It's going to be life changing. You know, whether it's a disease or, you know, like he has a disorder, but anything that they have, even diabetes. You know, my niece is diabetic, and that completely rocked my brother-in-law's world. Their world is totally changed because she's a child with diabetes, and everything changes. So I completely understand that. But I think the first days, my husband, I have to say, is not like most men. And I don't mean that in a detrimental way to men. I just mean that, you know, it typically in this disorder, in this family of people who are suffer with this, the men typically check out. There's a huge percentage of men that say, I can't do it. And I have to say my husband just jumped right in. He has been an amazing force. He kept me going in the beginning when I was not sure I could. And I am very thankful for that because I definitely needed that push to keep going. And you know, we just put our heads down and just dug in and said, what do you do for this? Where can we go? I just did just tons of research. I did my homework. And I think that is something I would tell any parent with any disorder, do your homework and know what you're dealing with. Don't just let people tell you, this is what's happening. This is what's going to happen. You have to know what you're looking at and then figure out what's best for you and your child. And we just got really lucky. I mean, we tried some other things in the very, very beginning before I had a diagnosis. I put him in speech therapy just to get him talking again because I was so just flustered.
Yeah.
And we didn't have a diagnosis and we didn't know what was going on. And it wasn't helping. You know, this certain type of therapy that they were using wasn't working on him. And I knew going in, once I had a diagnosis and I knew what type of behaviors, therapies to help the behaviors were out there, I knew we had to do something different than what we had tried. So we kind of had a little bit of jump start on that, I guess. But it really was just doing our homework and getting to the right people for the, you know, every child's different. Every child needs something different. Every child responds to something different. So we happened to hit on what he needed. Mm-hmm. The type of behavior therapy it just worked for him. And we saw results pretty quickly, I have to say. I was impressed with what we could see him responding to, and I really believe in my heart that that's what brought him back. I mean, he came back to us. So
that is so beautiful. And the tagline of your book is a family's recovery from autism. And you can never fully recover from autism, but I love how you're saying he was brought back to you, because while he still may have autism, so much of him was kind of unlocked. Mm-hmm. Is that how you describe it, kind of?
Yeah, and I do want to make a note about that on my title. I have to be honest. Some people I've gotten some kind of negative feedback on the title because, you know, in autism, within anything with the brain, you're never cured. You recover. That's what they say. But I really believe lately, even when you say someone's recovered, they kind of equate that back to the cured word. And that's not what I was trying to say. He's not cured. I don't know that he'll ever be fully recovered, and I don't ever want him to be, you know, but what I meant really in that title, it was kind of a dual meaning, was that we recovered from the diagnosis.
Yeah.
We recovered from the stigma. We recovered from all the negative parts of it as a family. And that's what I want people to understand, that it's, you know, you get handed that news, it takes you down a couple notches, and then you fight back and you overcome it. And that's really what I wanted the message to be. And yes, he has come back to me. He's come back full force. I mean, he is He's an amazing kid. He's hysterically funny. He has a great sense of humor. There's kind of in the autism world, usually an autistic child has something that they're good at. I mean, every child has something they're good at, mm-hmm. but when you're autistic, they really try to define what that is, you know, and his thing, and I think it would have been, whether he was autistic or not, is quoting movies, is acting on movies. I really believe he's going to be an actor because he can remember an entire movie. He sits in the back seat and he'll act out a large scene, like, you know, a 10-minute scene. He's in the back seat doing both parts. And it's like, and he's a crazy kid. I love it. I love that doesn't come too far. The apple didn't fall too far from the tree there. My husband and I like to quote movies, yeah. and we watch them again and again, and that's something we've always done. So I don't know if that's his autism or if that's just him, but he has an amazing talent for it, to remember movie lines.
That is a great thing to be known for. That's terrific. How fun is that? Yeah, I love how you made that clarification that you've recovered from just the label that was put on you, because you are more than a label. You are more than a mom of a child with autism. You are a mom, first and foremost. And every child has special needs of some kind. Every child is different. Right. And your road happened to have a diagnosis that required above and beyond therapies and whatnot. But I think that is a beautiful thing. So in addition to being a mom of Ryan, there was also Jenna. So Ryan's receiving 30 to 40 hours a week of therapies early on. Tell me what that was like, continuing to be a mom to Jenna, your typical child.
You know, I have to say, I don't know necessarily how successful I was, but I was very cognizant of that he was getting so much attention and so much of our energy and so much, you know, all of that was just, you know, lasered on him. And I tried very hard to make sure she still had her activities, and she got to be in brownies, and she got to play soccer, and we worked really hard at that. I have to say, we were very aware of it, and I think there was a very small time in her life when I think she felt a little bit of the jealousy, or the, you know, that he was getting more attention, and she acted out in a very quick small way. She was graffitiing everything. Mm-hmm. She was writing on the car, she was writing on her wall in her room, you know, and it was just, that was her way, and her sweet little cherub way of rebelling, I guess.
Yeah.
But it made us, you know, made me realize, okay, I need to do more for her. And so luckily she handled it pretty well, but we did make sure, I wanted so badly to make sure she wasn't overshadowed by him and what was happening. And we had a wonderful, we still have the same doctor, but at the time when they were coming to the home, we kind of told her about these concerns that, look, you know, we don't want her to be overshadowed. And so they were so wonderful and would bring Jenna into therapy with him. Mm. And because, yeah, I mean, you have to imagine, here comes these very young, very energetic people almost all of them would bring their own toys, because that was more exciting for Ryan rather than being working, because they always work for something. They work for a reinforcer, a food or a toy. And, you know, his stuff only went so far. So when they brought these fun things, and he only got to see a couple times a week, it was super reinforcing. So they come in with these fun toys, and then there's, you know, and they go up to play with Ryan, and then there's Jenna like, hey.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So we started including her in therapy. And I think after a while she realized, oh, this is pretty boring. I don't really want to be in here. Yeah. But, you know, it took her being involved in it to understand that and move on and say, I'd rather be watching cartoons, you know. So she was great. She was really great about it. And our therapists were great. And she'd earn stickers to earn a treat just like Ryan would. And I think, you know, there's many ways to make them included, but that was the way we did it, and it worked. And I just have to say, it was really a conscious effort on our part to make sure she didn't get left behind.
Absolutely. All kids crave that attention and engagement. And if they're not getting it, that's when they start acting out, right? Like you said, with the graffiti. Right. So it's so critical that, I mean, regardless of your family dynamic, that all children are given some one-on-one time and, you know, that attention that they're so just craving. Because if we can get them ahead of the negative behavior and we can build up their attention bucket ahead of time, they're much less likely to act out. And that's a huge deposit we can give them before the negative behaviors even start. So
I agree.
So I love that you were intentional about that. Yeah, I think that is really, really important. so many people, when they're in the throes of an early diagnosis or maybe in the early days of therapy for their child that has autism, they just are not sure what the future looks like. And like you said, like that uncertainty was so hard. Tell me about how that was, you know, seeing his progress early on, sometimes slow, sometimes quicker. And tell me how you got to that place where you were able to find your new normal, kind of, you know? Do you know what I mean?
Yes. In the beginning, because honestly, our biggest goal in the beginning was just to get him talking again.
Yeah.
You know, I knew that that was a huge layer of his frustration, and I undoubtedly so it would be for anyone to not be able to talk who hadn't learned to talk before.
Right.
So I knew that that was our, in my mind, our A1 number one priority. And once his language started to come back, I just felt that that would, you know, once I was able to communicate with him, and everything just kind of fell in, you know, when you do anything, when you move to a new, you know, house, or you start a new school, you start a new job, whatever it is, and you're like, you eventually ease into a new normal, whatever that is. And we found that normal. But I think the biggest part for me was to stop wishing for him to be normal, you know, for him to be, quote, normal, seeing him in a typical classroom, being a typical kid, having friends and play dates and, you know, things that you wish for your children. I decided none of that mattered. All that mattered was that he was happy and whatever he wanted to do. And that was a big step for me as a mother in general. You know, I think we put so much on what we think they should be doing and what we think will make them happy. And when you finally let go of that and let them be the ones in charge of that, it was a big relief for me, kind of, to say, you know what? I just want him to be happy. I don't care what that means. But as long as I can look at him and I can see him smile and he can tell me in his own little way that he's happy, I'm good.
I think that is so important. And in addition, so many times we take on the behavior and the accomplishments of our children as a reflection of how we're doing as a parent. How did you separate how you validated yourself as a mom apart from, you know, how your children were performing?
In the beginning, and I think also you have to realize that this was, you know, 10 years ago, and autism was in a different place 10 years ago. It wasn't that it was completely unheard of, but it was still very much under the radar.
Yes.
It's definitely come in the foreground now, but then it was still somewhat new, quote, new as far as the vast numbers of children that were being diagnosed. I mean, it just kind of exploded.
Right.
And then there were a lot of people who didn't understand that he had some behavior problems. They just thought, yeah, he was being a brat.
Right.
And, oh, he just needs a nap or people do look at you. And there was a time when I was considering I knew a lot of people did this in the autism world. They would, they had these little cards, like a business card that you would hand out to people that said, he's not misbehaving. He has autism. And it would explain a few things, and they would hand them out to, because apparently these people were having crowd situations. I never had crowd situations where someone was looking at my child.
Yeah. But,
you know, I think there's children more severe who would have complete meltdowns in a mall or whatever. And they would hand out, or at a playground, and they would hand out these cards, and people would just look at them like, what? They still didn't understand.
Right.
You know,
right.
So I think watching people do that, and I realized, you know, you're not going to please everybody.
Yeah.
And I just want to get him used to being in public. And, you know, that's my goal. And if people don't get it and think I'm a, you know, he's a brat or I'm a bad mom, so be it. You know, I'm not here to make their life better. I'm here to make his life better. So
yes. Amen.
Yeah. And I kind of got past that. And I think my husband is much more conscious of my son in public now than I am. Cause he does walk around, you know, yelling out movie stuff. And it's like, that's honestly his thing. There's a lot of autistic kids who flap their hands, who rock, who have to, you know, bounce on their toes, who do all these things outwardly that make them more visibly known as having some, you know, issues. And Ryan's issue, if you hate that word, but sorry, that's really, I don't know what else to call it. His what they call stemming thing, to self-stimulate them, their selves, is the movie talk. And he's walking around Costco and he's, Thomas, you must be found, or whatever. He's doing a whole Thomas scene from Thomas the Train, or he's doing, you know, a scene from whatever. And people kind of look over like, what's that kid doing? And I just, I'll tell them to try to keep it down, but I really don't care.
Right. I think that's a great place to get to.
I just feel like he's not hurting anybody. If he was cussing people out, that'd be different, you know, but yes. I mean, he's just talking to himself.
Right.
And he's perfectly happy. And it's like, you know, if they don't get it, they don't get it. And so that's just kind of, it took some time to get there, but that's kind of where I'm at now.
Yeah. I love that perspective. I think we can all have a little more of that in our, you know, daily wheelhouse. Like, you know what? We are here to help our children, not to help any of you onlookers and to make any of you feel better. I like that. That is so great. So obviously he's made a lot of progress and you got to the place where you wanted to write a book. Tell me why you wanted to write this book.
You know, it's funny. Like I said earlier, I've always wanted to be a writer. I got a degree in English. I set out to, you know, wanted to be in journalism or working for a magazine, and it just never panned out in the time frame where I was at after college and such. So I kind of went the traditional route. I went away from it for a while, and then about 6 years ago, I guess, I'm trying to think when I started writing this. Mm-hmm. I had finally decided it was time. Over the years, I've taken various classes after college, you know, trying to figure out how am I going to pursue this dream? How am I going to write a book? Because it's so daunting. It's just,
right.
The thought of it, I mean, that's why most people don't write books, because it's really hard.
Yeah.
But I was in a bookstore. I'm a voracious reader. And there was a, you know, write a book in a month book on the shelf. It was staring at me, and I picked it up, and it had all these exercises, writing exercises to write. And if you follow this, you know, this recipe, you can write your first draft in a month. And I thought, I'm doing it. That's it. I'm done. I'm tired of wasting time. I'm going to sit down and do this. And I wrote all these pre-writing exercises about my mother. My mother died of cancer at 43. I was 23. I mean, she was very young. I was very young. And I thought, this is the story that I'm supposed to tell. And I did all the pre-writing exercises, you know, that they asked for about her. And so when it was finally time to, you know, put fingers on the keyboard, I sat down, and out of nowhere, I mean, literally, that first, the beginning of the first chapter, I hate the word, sounds gross. I just vomited it on the page. Like, it just came out. Yeah. And I just sat there typing about Ryan and about what that all meant to me. And
wow.
A few pages, and I'm sobbing, and I stopped, and I said, what the heck is going on here? And I just realized, you know, okay, let's see where this goes. And I finished, you know, a draft of that first chapter, and I didn't tell anybody, and I handed him the few pages, and he read it, and he looked up, and he had tears in his eyes, and he's not a big crier, so I knew it meant something. And he said, you have to write this. Oh. And that's initially how it started. It wasn't what I planned on.
Yeah.
But I felt, you know, this is something that's obviously needs to come out. And so I wrote it more as in the beginning, not really thinking I'm going to write a book, but thinking I'm going to write a story about our family.
Right.
And more so for my children to understand when they got bigger, what happened, you know, what went on. And that was kind of how I started it. And then as I, you know, got farther and farther into it, and I would started, you know, telling people, hey, I'm writing this, you know, I don't know if I really called it a book. I don't know what I called it, but I said, I'm writing this, and I would show it to people, and they would read the first, you know, it was like 45, 50 pages. And every single person would say to me, you need to do this. You're going to help people.
Yes.
And I heard that enough times where I said, okay, they're right. I'm going to write this book. And then once I started saying I'm writing a book, everything changed. And I just sat down and, you know, because it's not, many people have asked me, how do you find time to write a book? You don't find time, you make the time. And it's not like I had just spare hours where I would just sit down and, you know, type away. It was carving out the time. It was leaving my family on Sunday afternoons to go write because there was no other time, you know. Yeah. And you have to it's something you want to do. I wanted to do it. Right. And the further I got into it, I really just felt this is something I need to do. And then it, you know, went from there.
I love that. We talk a lot on the podcast about how it's so important as moms to do things that are really life-giving to you. Because, I mean, your own needs can get put on the back burner so easily. I mean, we are just so caught up in the minute-to-minute needs of our children that regardless of whether you work outside the home or you're a stay-at-home mom, any situation, I mean, we put ourselves last. That's just, I think, we feel it's our obligation. But when we're so drained by the end of each day, we're not our best self for our children. And so it is so critical for us to find those things in our lives that are life-giving and that fill our tanks so that we come to them ready to love them and serve them the best way we know how, because we're taking care of ourselves.
Absolutely.
And for me, it's putting on this podcast. I've felt such I don't know, joy coming from doing this passion project. And for you, regardless of what it took, what sacrifices had to be made and schedules juggled or whatnot, this was important to you. And chances are you came back filled up to your children, ready to love them and serve them better than you could have if you had neglected this. Wouldn't you say?
Oh, 100%. Yes.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. I love that. So what was it like when you were finished? I mean, you've been working on this for years.
Yeah.
What was it like? Did you like put the final period and you're like, woo, done? Or were you just like sobbing? Like, by the end?
Oh yeah. I sobbed through most of it, I have to say. And you know, and it was kind of, I don't know if there is such a thing as a typical book experience, but you know, things change over the years, and you know, to get traditionally published is next to impossible. To get into the big publishing houses, you know, it's just really hard. They have the amount of, they're deluged with, you know, manuscripts, and to break through and be that one is, you know, near impossible. And I knew that going in, and I knew I didn't write a Pulitzer Prize winner. I knew it wasn't that great, you know, but I knew it was my story, and it was important to me.
Yeah.
And I kind of went a different route. I went a hybrid, which is the new way of doing things. And it's part self-publishing, part publisher. Because there's a publisher at the helm, which is different than other self-publishing. And they turned my whole process around. I mean, they seriously, I can't even imagine how I would have done it without them, because I was just really struggling to find someone to believe in. And no one wanted it. Nobody was interested. Everyone I talked to was like, that's been done. I don't think autism. Nobody wanted it. And that's devastating to spend that many years painfully crafting this story to be told no again and again. And so that's why I went the route I went, and I couldn't have picked a better route for me. And it worked for me, and they handed me this again, like another child. When I received the book, it was like having a child. It was a very long gestation period, and a pretty painful birth, but there it was, you know, and it was something, like you said, that I needed it for me. I mean, it started out as one thing, and it morphed over so many different things. And I actually forgot what the question was now. What were we?
I think you're doing a great job. I believe it was Elizabeth Gilbert that talked about in Big Magic how if you're setting out writing a book to help people, like, don't even bother. You should write because you have a story to tell. And if people are helped because of that byproduct, great, wonderful, more power to you. But your goal should just be to write and to like unleash that thing with that inside you, that story. And it sounds like that's really what you did. And in turn, you've created this beautiful piece of art to share with the world, not because it's a Pulitzer Prize winner, but because it's your story. And I think the best stories I've ever read are the ones that are relatable to me, you know, and it's not because every word is just so crafted unbelievably. It's just like, this is a story of a real mom dealing with real things and being so honest. And I think you hit the nail on the head with this book, Leandra.
Oh, wow. I really appreciate that. That means a lot to me.
Yeah, you bet. You bet. So exciting. So is it out for purchase now?
Yes, it's on Amazon, Yay. Barnes & Noble, and it's in a lot of bookstores, but I think most people these days I don't have a bookstore near me, so I have to order most things on Amazon.
I know,
so,
right?
Yeah, so that's on Amazon, easy to find, Make a Wish for Me. I have a blog / website where I have a ton of information on there about the writing of the book, because I blogged it to get, you know, to kind of start the book, and then it's got all information about other great autism books that I've read. I have on there. So those kind of, and then that's where I like people. I really hope people who read it would reach out to me, you know, that's in the back of the book, the blog address, but, it's okay. So Then I Said is my blog, but, I really do like it when people reach out to me and tell me their experience with the book or their experience in their life. And that's why I did it. And so I say it every time someone asks me, please, you know, reach out to me. I love to hear it. I love to, that's part of my passion is helping other moms, especially with this, but in general, I mean, we all have things we go through. Yeah. So that's all I really would like is people to, you know, reach out to me and what they think about the book, the story, their story. Really, I just want to hear their stories too.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And we all have a story to tell, mm-hmm. you know, and it's all valuable. And I think moms are each other's best resources. And so the more that we interact with other moms or read their stories, whether it's in the written word or verbally at the park or whatever, we need to share our stories because then it helps each other to realize we're not so alone. We may look like we have it all together at times, but we don't. And we're all just trying to figure it out and doing the best we can.
That's right.
I love that. We're each other's best cheerleaders. What would you want people to know about Ryan? If they saw you in the store with him and he's spouting movie quotes and maybe you're getting some looks or he's throwing a tantrum, you know, in years past or things like that. What would you want strangers to know about Ryan in particular? Or, you know, more broadly, children with autism?
I think it's just, you know, have kindness, have compassion.
Yeah.
You know, for any child, really. But a child who can't regulate themselves, there's things going on with them. And they are fighting to figure out our world.
Yeah.
You know, my favorite quote in the whole world is, you know, be extra kind. I'm paraphrasing, but be extra kind because you never know what battle someone else is fighting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I try to implement in my life. You know, I'm not so concerned that what people think of me,
mm-hmm.
but I think having a child with special needs has made me more, I always was compassionate, but definitely more so.
Yeah.
And when I go out and see children having, you know, a fit, I do try to get eye contact with the mom if she'll give it, but most of them are so mortified.
Right.
And I just don't, I think, you know, if you're someone who doesn't have a special needs child, who really doesn't have that insight, I would like to give you some and just kind of, just have a little bit of compassion because you don't know what battle that child's fighting.
Yeah.
And we don't know how hard it is for them to just be in the world. And it is mm-hmm. in the beginning and maybe some of them their whole lives.
Yeah.
But Ryan, he seems to have assimilated, you know, he handles himself pretty well. And I think I consider us lucky for that.
Yeah. So. And so I think there's a lot of hope in that for parents that aren't sure what the future holds for their child. There can be great hope and great potential in your child by getting them the right therapies or whatever it is, whatever road that you are choosing to go down. They can be really successful. And,
yes.
and all these children are so individual and we can't even comprehend their potential. And I just think that's so exciting. Because
there's
limitless potential for all of our children. And you can't discount them just because there's a diagnosis.
Absolutely. And one last thing, I think we're almost done. I'm not sure, but I want to make sure I say this and I don't think I did. And because you've said it twice and I 100% agree with you, the idea of hope.
Yeah.
Honestly, hope is what got me through the early dark days and, you know, and on and today even because the future is very unclear for him as an adult. There's not enough programs in the world. So now that's where I'm turning my attention is what is he going to do with his life? You know, I got him to this point and that what next? And so that's, I have to continue with that hope. I have to just grab on and not let go of it. And that's what I want. Whatever phase of autism, of a disorder, of a diagnosis you are with your child, don't ever let the hope go because it's a dark place it takes you to without it. And hope is so, so critical, especially with the unknowns of this disorder, but of anything really in life. So I want to make sure that that's what is heard is how crucial hope is in our lives.
Yeah. I love it. Why did you name the book Make a Wish for Me?
There's a scene in the book. He's about 3 years old. He's still not talking yet, but he's getting there. He's sign language and he's getting there and he's calmed down and he's in a routine and it's his birthday and I put a cake in front of him and, you know, candles and he didn't really know what to do with it. And so I tried to explain it to him, but I kind of had a moment after we blew out the candles and I walked away. I thought, you know, he doesn't understand, at least that I can see that he understands or that I can explain to him at this point in his life what wishing is about, making a birthday wish or throwing a penny into a well or whatever the way we wish, you know, on eyelashes or whatever.
Yeah.
And I just realized, you know, that kind of goes back to the hope thing, that, you know, when you're wishing for something, you're hoping for it. And I decided then and there that I would make the wishes for him until he knew how.
Oh, I love that.
So that's where it came from. Yeah.
That is beautiful. That gives me chills, Leandra. Ooh, that's beautiful. That's really beautiful. And we can wish great things for our children. That's beautiful.
Yeah, we should never stop wishing for
Absolutely.
Our children.
Absolutely. I always ask my guests one final question, Leandra, and it is this. What would you tell your pre-motherhood self?
Oh, I think be ready for anything.
Yeah.
but embrace every minute that you can. It goes so fast, and I know it's cliche, but I cannot believe that I've just celebrated my child's 13th birthday, my baby, you know, and it really does go in a blink of an eye. And take more pictures. You know, I really think that I don't take enough pictures now because the cameras are kind of obsolete. And even when I had a camera, I mean, I did then, but then when I switched to digital, everything changed. So I miss film because it made me take more pictures. So, take pictures and just embrace the moments as they come, because they go so fast, and there's nothing more rewarding than being a parent. I really believe that's what our world is about, is having a family. And I'm so blessed to have had two beautiful children, and I wish I had more, but, pre-motherhood self, I think just really, just embrace it all and don't take anything for granted.
Yeah, I totally agree. I don't know if you're familiar with the website, powerofmoms.com. They put out great content, great articles about a wide variety of topics, but I just published an article on there this week called Embracing the Seasons. And the number one tip I had for embracing the seasons is take lots of pictures and journal, because you're going to rely on those memories when your kids are, you know, rebelling as teenagers or, you know, smelly and whatever, and leaving their stuff all over the floor. You're going to look back at those pictures and you're just going to think, oh, they can do no wrong. Remember that moment. And you're just going to cherish those memories. And so, yes, taking pictures and writing things down, I think, is huge. We have to take the time to do that. Yeah. And you just wrote a book to do that. So way to go.
Thank you.
Oh, Leandra, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today and to share your story. I really hope so many people read your book and are impacted by your story. I know they will be.
Thank you, Jessica. I really appreciate you having me. Great show, and good luck to you with your podcast.
Thank you very, very much. And like I said, everything we talked about will be in the show notes on extraordinarymomspodcast.com, so they can find a link to your book and anything else we talked about. And I'll also put some pictures of your family up there if that's okay.
Sure, that's great.
Yay. All right. Thanks, Leandra. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our very first episode on the Extraordinary Moms podcast was with Emily Dixon, whose daughter was diagnosed with autism. And I love that we can revisit the same topics on the Extraordinary Moms podcast, but the stories look a little different, the message is a little bit different, and there's just so much we can learn from each and every mom. I hope you loved Leandra. Definitely check out her book, Make a Wish for Me. I really enjoyed reading it. It is such a heartfelt memoir of her family's story, and her son sounds so incredible, and it just is a great dose of hope. And I love that that was the theme of this entire interview. April is Autism Awareness Month, and I just challenge you to become more educated about autism in general. No two children with autism are the same, but the more we know about autism, the more we can be understanding and compassionate. And I think that is a critical thing that is missing in society today. And the more grace we can have for each other's children and for each other as moms, the better that we can all be and the more we can cheer each other on. I just thank you so much for being with us on this episode of the Extraordinary Moms podcast. As always, you can follow me on social media, Jessica Dahlquist3 on Instagram. You can also go to our show notes page at extraordinarymomspodcast.com for any of the stuff we talked about in today's episode. It was just such a good one. I just feel so encouraged, and I just have a big smile on my face after talking to Leandra, and I hope that you feel that same dose of encouragement today. I hope you have a wonderful day, and I will see you next week on another episode of the Extraordinary Moms Podcast.